Blog Talk Radio.
If I speak for your followers, and I speak for your ex-followers, and I speak for the curious outsiders looking in, and you remain silent in the shadows and don't let your balls drop enough to come out and say something, then I say, who do you speak for, Mr. Miscavige?
Anything on earth that says, don't listen to your mum and dad, don't talk to your mum and dad, that's bad.
Yep.
I remember sitting there wishing I could just scream out loud and beg for help. But I knew if I did that, I would never see Mark again.
This is the thing about real life. You can't experience the great thing without the bad thing.
I felt like it would probably be better off if we didn't exist. And, came up with a plan on how to end it.
He talks about a seven-year-old child. Even if he's referring to actually an adult, so let's say we change that to an adult. Okay, the woman shudders because the man hits her even passionately. The fact is that she shudders.
To do a big apology to me and give me my kids back.
I'm still shocked by the evil. Yes, even to this day, when I see a video of a former friend or family member, I'm like, this is pure evil at work.
All right, welcome to another Come Get Some Extra Scientology edition. Of course, this is part two with Marcus Sawyer. And before we get into that, I want to go ahead and say congratulations to Lori Hodgson for her book, Mother's Heartbreak, is now available via Kindle on Amazon. There's also a link, look for it. I'll probably add it to the description here, a link for the Aftermath Foundation where you can go through Amazon, use that link. Part of the proceeds to go to the Aftermath Foundation. And already by buying Lori's book, a portion of those proceeds would go towards eradicating disconnection to Scientology, various things that Lori's going to be getting involved in. So definitely get a hold of this book. I've actually read it myself. It's an amazing story. It is, as I found out with every book that's been coming out, not one book is exactly like the other. You think it would be, because it's essentially the same story, but everybody has their personal experience. You need to read this. And then again, I'll be putting my review on Amazon later today on that as well. The fun thing about that is a couple key points that apparently Scientology doesn't want you to know from this book is John Ellender popped up in Lori's parking lot at work one time and creeped up on her and asked her if she enjoys beatings. He and the Squirrel Busters followed her to Marty Rathbun's house in Texas, where it seemed like Marty was expecting them but wasn't admitting to that. It was kind of weird. And then there's some kind of $3 million gag order on her son. And these are some that caused Scientology to threaten some media outlets not to tell Lori's story and interview her about her books. So that's interesting. So I just made sure I said that there and then posting it every day on social media because they don't want me to. They don't want her to. But there it is. Also, back in the beginning of this podcast, back when I first started doing it a few interviews in, you might remember I interviewed Aaron Smith Levin. And there was a gentleman I had on the show about him and his wife having some problems at her WISE job because he didn't know they worked for a Scientology WISE company. They were having some litigation, and they've settled, but they weren't able to outlast the lawyers. They had to settle the case, and as part of the agreement, they've been asked to ask me and other media people who they've talked to remove any mention of them and them mentioning the company and the CEO of that company. So I will go back, and I will, just to help out this person, not for Scientology, not for these people, I will remove that content. However, that settlement's with those people, not with me. So Judy Nagengast of Continental Design and Engineering Inc. should know that I really don't appreciate being put in the position by her and Scientology and her lawyers to remove my content. Again, they didn't ask me personally, but through this individual. That's not cool. And I don't enjoy it. It's work for me. And I know I don't have to do it, but I don't want to see someone else get penalized. So I'll concede, but Judy Nagengast of the Scientology Wise Company, Continental Design and Engineering, Inc., should know that I don't appreciate it. Anyone listening should know that if you get an offer by Judy Nagengast of Continental Design Engineering to work there or do business with them, in my personal opinion, it might be a bad idea. So that's enough about Judy Nagengast and Continental Design and Engineering, Inc. Right now, I'm going to go ahead and take you right into where we left off with Marcus Sawyer.
You know, it really is real. It's visceral. Like, whenever I tried to kill myself, the entire staff was, except for John Jones, John made the decision to stay at a specific tone level until I routed off, which was 2.0, anger. Because he's the one that found me, and he just flowed that 2.0 anger at me for, he did for years after, too. I guess until he went clear, but the rest of the staff, it was very visceral, real, and heartbreaking that I almost did that, you know. But at the same time, it was a betrayal that I inflicted upon them, because God forbid if I had actually succeeded and hurt Scientology, and then there's another deeper sickness where I am not who they thought I was because I did that. I am a real problem, and I am a really degraded being because, and now they have to look inside themselves to see why they didn't know sooner, you know? So it's just general misery and sadness all around. Yeah. It's for everybody. Everybody gets pissy Cheerios.
So, if I may ask, did you come into Scientology with thoughts like that?
With thoughts like what?
Of suicide?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, I was about to throw myself in front of an 18-wheeler a couple of weeks before I went to the mission in Baton Rouge.
Oh, wow.
Like, I was standing at the side of a highway in Nashville, Tennessee on I-40, going to just step over into the oncoming lane. And then I don't know what I did. I think I prayed or something, and I just walked back to the Chinese restaurant where I ate. But I had a plan. I was going to eat a nice Chinese meal and go jump in front of a Mack truck.
Wow.
Yeah. And to go back even further, I mean, like, I was abused as a kid, so like I tried to hold my breath to kill myself when I was 8 years old. But that's as far back as it goes.
Wow. And Scientology didn't help with this in the least, it sounds like.
No, you know what's funny, dude, is that Scientology actually, looking back on all of it, is wasn't the most abusive times of my life. In fact, the people have been asking me to write a book for a long time, and I've tried. It's difficult, but I'm working on two books right now. One of them more than the other. The other one is just, I already know what I'm going to do with that. But this one is about my time before Scientology. And it really, I mean, the setup was perfect, you know, like, the reason I say people who have been abused prior to getting involved in a cult are more susceptible is because that's what happened to me, you know, and I have a lot of story and, you know, about how, I learned to live with abuse, and how I accepted it as just, you know, that's the way it is. That's who I am. A constant sense of self-doubt and, you know, self-hatred, really.
Wow.
Self-hatred. And, you know, treat my body horribly, think horrible thoughts. And, but at the same time, my escape has always been music, and that's what brings me joy. And so I was doing, for a long time, I was doing this grueling lifestyle where I was just like horribly abusing my body and my mind with drugs and alcohol and being on the road, but I was also getting a lot of joy out of playing music for people, you know? So it was a very extreme yin and yang at a very fast rate for about 7 years from when I, you know, left home at 16 to when I joined Scientology when I was 21 and, or 20. And, so that experience will be documented, but, the worst part, the point is that the worst part, of my story isn't Scientology. It's not at all. And actually, the story before Scientology is much more grimacing, you know, it's just, ugh. But, oh no, I mean, you know what? I couldn't be happier to be where I am today. I'm thankful every day that I'm alive. You know, that's one of the great things about, surviving not just Scientology, but abuse before, you know, it's like, hey, I could be anywhere and I'm okay. You know, I really feel that way. And in the last month, I've been in quite a few places. I met you in Clearwater. Before that, I was in Jackson. Before that, and then after that, I was in New Orleans. And then I had back and forth from Lake Charles to New Orleans. And the subscribers have helped me a ton with the GoFundMe, which is crucial because I've been unemployed and still trying to get my medical release after the post-op necrotic tissue cancer stuff removed last year.
Wow.
And
recovery, you're recovered or?
Well, next month, and this is, again, with the help of the people who subscribe to LogWorld, it made this possible because next month I've got an appointment in New Orleans at the University Medical Center. It's a very new learning medical hospital, which is great because they're not scared to run every test that they need to run to give you a clean bill of health. I personally feel like I'm going to have a clean bill of health, but the only thing that I really need to worry about with the contraindications of the surgery that I had is that some kind of the necrotic tissue turned cancerous and got into the marrow or the bones. So as long as I don't have anything in my bones and everything else just checks out, it's in my private areas, so I'm not going to talk about those, but it's looking okay. I'm feeling okay. I'm putting on some weight again, and I'm not at this point. I think I'm going to be back in a stable living situation because I was living out of a car and sleeping on couches and stuff like that. So, and you know, the struggle is real, my friend. But what I'm saying is that there are some people. I've been amazed at the love that people are showing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, one of Brenda Turing, who was there, you met her. She's a subscriber. She has been watching my videos since the first one. And,
yeah, Brenda, yeah.
She flew down from Alaska to bring me to the event in Clearwater. Like,
that's cool.
I mean, how cool is that? That was just such a wonderful thing to do. It was on a bucket list, you know. I mean, I always wanted to go to the Scientology Mecca.
Right.
But it was in a different, definitely a different setting than it would have been. You know, I almost went to Flag once. They were trying to recover me, and they wanted me to go do an auditing session over there, and I did.
Oh.
I was like, yeah, no.
Did you feel uncomfortable being so close to it?
A little bit. Like, I walked around a little bit, but I didn't want to, like, get caught in an alley with seven Scientologists.
Right.
Like, I mean, you know, I don't know.
I don't think they would have done it, but it just would have been.
No, and you know what? I'm pretty low profile, man. Like, I'm just, like, you can watch my videos, and some of them, like, aren't even about Scientology, or they don't seem like they're about Scientology. I did a series called What If Scientologists. And I played the entire Mass Effect trilogy as a Scientologist would. And so it's like, it was really odd because I never did it as a Scientologist. I mean, I was a Scientologist, But I wasn't playing it as a strict Scientologist, because when you leave staff, you're like, fuck all that strict stuff. Like, I'm gonna do what I want to do. And the outcome of the series was so dramatically different. And I played that game all the way through at least 10 times.
Did you say that?
So, have you played the series?
I haven't played much of it.
Okay. Well, it's more than the planet, you know?
Right, the universe.
And, you know, a lot of the subscribers were very surprised because there's a lot of terminology in the game. Sounds like Scientologists talking.
Weird. Is that intentional, you think?
I have no idea.
That's just, maybe just sci-fi speak.
Yeah, you know, like the comm is down, or the comm, you know, like that's one of the things, comm, and then, but there were others too. It was just strange. But yeah, I mean, it's not like I'm some prolific whatever, like, fuck them. They can, but you know what? I am also, I got the location in a city nearby with an office space type setup that I'm going to shoot a series called The Mission. That's going to be a, sort of an introspective psychological thriller, I guess, about, you know, being in a cult, and it's based on my experience. And the only thing I need to do is get a permit for shooting on the street. I've got an audio crew, and it's called Octane Sound, and they're really good. I've worked with them in the past, and I really want to shoot this thing. I've been wanting to shoot it for about 6 months, and
I'm really interested in seeing how that turns out.
Me too, because I'm going to have to act in a lot. The thing is, most of the scenes are going to be me talking to me, because every person on staff is going to be me. Because when you're on staff, like I was saying, I'm sort of representing the concept of unity, in that every person who's on staff will only see them as themselves. Like, every other person is them. They're just part of the group. Third dynamic mentality, pack mentality.
Yeah.
And so all of those other mission staff are going to be me. And, you know, I have some ideas of, like, you know, if someone, you bring someone in and they come in, they do a course, whatever, they slowly turn into me because they're just another fucking Scientologist.
Is that going to be playing on your YouTube channel?
Yeah, I'm going to do it as a YouTube series, and I've got a good friend of mine here who I think he's not an actor, which is perfect, because what I need him to do, he won't have to act, because he can do it, like, perfectly. The executive director, kind of like, asshole, like Tom Steiner, like, he really could not care less. He never talked about Scientology, really. When he did talk about it, it was so half-hearted. It was like one of those older Ronco salesmen that, you know, worked for the company for 10 years and never got the trip to Maui or whatever. You know, he's just like disgruntled, you know, because, I mean, Tom won an award, but he didn't win any after that. And he got liver transplants, you know, all that shit. So they probably think he's a degraded being or something. But, you know, those are the things that are coming in the pipeline. You know, they're gonna happen one way or the other, and I'm gonna enjoy doing it, because that's what I'm doing now. I'm gonna enjoy. I try to enjoy every day of my life, because every day, it was really a religious experience going down to Clearwater, my friend, and being a part of that, because whereas my brother, when he paid off his freeloader's debt, he said he finally felt like he had ended cycle, which in Scientology means it's over, it's done, I've paid my debt. Well, going to Clearwater was my end cycle.
Wow.
And now it's like every day I'm thankful. I'm like, I can believe whatever I want.
Right.
I can believe in Jesus if I want. I can believe in Buddha. I can believe in Taoism, you know? I can believe in all that stuff. It's valid. It's a hell of a lot more valid. You know what? I could be a crazy-ass Catholic like some of my family down here, the Irish Catholic French people that are just super, super Catholic, and still feel okay about it because it's so much better than Scientology.
Absolutely.
You know, they may be like, well, we're going to pass the, you know, in Catholic churches, sometimes they'll pass the damn bucket around like 5 times instead of 2, you know, and it's just like, come on, guys, really? And, but that's still better than Scientology, you know, by a million light years.
Absolutely. I mean, at the very least, if you're going to be down on organized religion, at the very least, organized religion preaches community and family. And they actually have real programs.
They preach it, and some practice it. They preach it, and some practice it.
Actually, yes. And since
some of them practice it.
Some of them do.
This has been great talking to you, man. This is awesome.
Okay,
I appreciate you. I appreciate you having me on.
I'm glad you came on, man. It's cool. When you talked about leaving and getting actual real therapy, was that blow your mind what actual real therapy was capable of doing?
It really did, man. I was very skeptical at first because you're taught to be that way as a Scientologist. I mean, I was a Scientologist and I studied the material for about 11 years. And so I was very, very scared that they were going to want to prescribe me something. And I was very skeptical and quiet with the therapist, you know, but one, you know, by the time I went to, his name is Don Short, and he was a Mennonite. So he was kind of in a cult too. And he specializes in PTSD, which, as I said earlier, the worst abuses I experienced were not in Scientology. They were before. And so a lot of the therapy was actually for that. And that is where I opened up. I didn't open up as much at first in the Scientology department. I opened up more, which is kind of odd because that's really what I was going to Scientology for to begin with. I really wanted help with all that. But the guy was very experienced. He ran Gulf Coast Family Services for 30 years. He's a clinical psychologist named Don Short, and he lives in Lafayette, Louisiana. He's fantastic. If there's anybody who listens to this who's in Louisiana, no, I'm seriously going to plug him because he helped me. I was an ex-cult member, and he is amazing. So anyways, yeah, he helped me a lot, but it started with the stuff prior to Scientology. And then I started this talk about Scientology, but then I had to start coming back to Lake Charles for therapy. Cause Don is not super cheap, but boy, is he good. And I did the rest of my therapy here. And, amazingly, after about 2 years of therapy, I'm sitting in therapy and I'm, you know, dude's like, hey, you know, you seem all right, man. I mean, your coping skills are like on point, like the shit that you've been through. For you to not have killed yourself, like you've tried like multiple times, and it sounds like you've come pretty close, and you've also almost been killed. So, like, you're pretty lucky, and also you're able to cope with all of the emotional stresses that went along with all that trauma. So, honor those feelings and just honor yourself and know that only you know what you've been through, and don't worry about what other people think. You know, because that's a big problem for people who get into abusive situations is that they don't trust their own, what they see with their own eyes, you know, because they see abuse and they're like, is it abuse? Is it really? Did I deserve it? No, nobody deserves abuse, period. So,
you're in a different place. You're headed to a different place now, right? I hope.
Oh, big time, man. I mean, I feel like it. I feel like that's where it's going. I feel like my DNA literally changed when I went to Clearwater. It's crazy.
Yeah, it was a good event. Do you worry? Do you get a little worried? There might be some people who are just fan struck, or they have a more of a morbid curiosity than an interest in helping. Is that something?
Oh, I don't care either way. One thing did happen in Clearwater though that was I kind of got on my soapbox a little bit, because there were two women who were talking to a girl whose boyfriend was a public Scientologist, and then apparently they had seen some of my videos, so they were like, well, talk to him, he knows, he was a Scientologist. And I kind of felt like shoehorned into this conversation where they wanted me to, like, basically tell this girl to break up with her boyfriend.
You felt like you were putting you were putting on the spot a little bit.
Yeah, kind of put me on the spot, but that doesn't ever bother me. I can handle the hot seat. So what I ended up doing, you know, there are things, I hate to say it, man, but, I mean, I was a good communicator before Scientology. Like I said, I have a voice for radio. I could talk like this all night.
Okay.
All right. What's come get some extra podcast.
Welcome to the show, guys.
Welcome to the show. When people start to say things like Tom Cruise should burn in hell, or Christy Alley should die, I don't get offended. I'm not offended by that, but it does concern me, because if someone is supporting me, and you know what I mean, like they're in support of me and others who have been a victim of Scientology. Had I been a Scientologist, they would feel that way about me.
Exactly.
Like, right. Burn in hell. Burn in hell? No, they don't, because I did something. But guess what? It took me a long time to do something, and it took Mike a long time to do something. And guess what? It may take Tom Cruise a lifetime to do something, and he may never do it. And John Travolta may never do it. And Christy Alley may never do it. But never give up hope. Never. Ever.
Yeah, I'm actually, if I'm thinking constructively about it, you know, I'm actually tearing it down piece by piece, and the way you're looking at it, I feel like it's okay to be upset with them, because they should know. Like, Tom Cruise seems
pretty explicit. However, he knows. Yeah, that's the Org of Slaves.
Ignorance to pretending you understand where their head's at.
Yeah, and there's no way to know where their head's at, because their whole world, they live in Candyland, Disneyland. Okay. Tom knows he's got slaves, but he lives in Candyland, Disneyland. He knows. And so, yes, that does make him culpable and wrong for allowing it to continue. But for do not condemn someone and judge someone. And God forgive me for saying this, but the Christians that support the supporters of Leah Remini group should consider that, you know, consider your own scripture. Judge not, lest ye be judged. The kingdom of heaven lies within. That means that it is within anyone's power to break that spell, if you want to call it that, of Scientology, and live right. Or if you're a Buddhist, right action. Right intention, right motivation, you know, like it is universal among all religions. There is only one true God, right?
Right.
That's the thing, one true God. So I just, whenever people say things like that about some of the biggest celebrities, here's the way I think about it, and here's the way I would encourage other people to consider it. Because if you're imagine you're Tom Cruise, and imagine that's what you're hearing. Tom is a fucking piece of shit, and he's got slaves and they burn in hell. But you've also got David Miscavige in here saying, don't listen to those FPs, man. They're FPs. Don't let them get in your head. Don't let them get in your head. You're doing what you're supposed to do for the planet. You know, you're going to Target too. And as crazy as that sounds, you're going to heaven. All right. So who are we to judge what heaven is and all this other stuff? That's my point of view. I have a unique point of view on all that. I don't feel, which is liberating at this point, because I actually, the worst thing Scientology can do to you, and I think I could win back anybody who's listening who's a Christian that I might have just offended with this statement, is that it does not matter what state you're in. You can always find that God is seeking you. If you know, however you want to say that, there is always a internal. That's why we had cognitive dissonance. We know it's wrong when we do something like have someone mortgage their house and they have three kids and now they're moving into a house with one bedroom.
Right.
Like, we know that's wrong, even though we're pre-programmed with our religious belief to think that and to justify it. And Scientology ain't the only kind of cult that does that. Pentecostals do this stuff too. Jehovah's Witnesses do it. The hippie communes do it. But there is cognitive dissonance. So, you know, if anything, I was never intimidated by going there. In fact, when I first got there, I walked up to Mike and gave him a hug, and I kind of feel bad because I didn't explain right away. I gave him my phone. I was like, "Can you call my brother and tell him you want a Happy Meal?" And then I caught myself. I was like, "Oh, I'm the Melrose guy. We talked in 2015 before I did my video." And he's like, "Okay, I know who you are now." So he called my brother and said all that, and that was a treat because my brother didn't get to go. But I wasn't intimidated by anybody. Everyone was very cool. I did have one girl, like, starstruck and run up and hug me, and I didn't know who she was. But we kind of blended for the most part and talked to a lot of the locals, and that was really interesting because there's not a lot going on down there, is what they say. So
that night there was.
So it was a beautiful, wonderful night, and I enjoyed it very much, and I hope there's more in the future. I'd love to do it again.
There will be. I will say that, you know, you talk about how there's some negativity sometimes in the forums and stuff and in some of the communities. Like, there was no, that I could see, there was no negativity on Cleveland Street that night amongst those people. It was just from top to bottom, just a class act there. It was really good.
Well, it was also roped off tighter than I'm not going to say.
That was because something else was going on that night.
I know. Well, believe me, I know. I used to put the damn events on in Hollywood, man. I used to have to go get the permits.
Right.
By the way, if you want to do a gay Nazi sex parade in West Hollywood, it's only $300 permit.
I guess you're trying to make a point. And I get your point.
Oh, Jesus.
There's a couple more things I want to talk about, but we're really running low on time.
Sure.
I know a lot of people don't talk about the Ark, and you and I had a personal conversation about it that helped me understand it a lot better.
Well, first of all, it's ARC.
Right. Is it never pronounced ARC?
Never.
Oh, so that's me doing the not knowing thing. ARC.
Well, you know, that's a word in Scientology too, not know. There's no and not know. And then there's is and not is.
Knowing.
And then there's as is. There's as is, isness, not isness, havingness, beingness. Yeah, there's all kinds of isnesses.
Can I just tell you how silly it looks to regular people when celebrities go on TV speaking about Scientology and the put Nestle?
Oh, I thought you were just going to stop right there because I agree with you up until the part with the Scientologist. But yeah, you're even more correct there.
I was watching that. I was like, really? Is that how they talk? And it's not even just how you talk. It's the words Hubbard gave you. And I just want to say that.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll get into ARC another time. We'll do another one if you want to.
Sure. We can do ARC and the overt act motivator sequence. That's what we were talking about the other night. And those two would be enough to definitely warp some minds for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, we can do that. What I want to talk about is because, you know, we talked briefly about how there's Scientology TV now. And
yeah.
Have you watched any of that?
Yeah, I did. My brother and I mentioned it briefly, but we watched it the night it came out. I was in New Orleans, and he texted me. He was like, I forget what he said. He was like, something like, what the fuck is this shit? and I was like, I don't know. I haven't watched it yet. And I got back home from the store, and I turned it on my phone. I downloaded the app and started watching the damn, you know, meet a Scientologist and the banjos and all this shit. The banjo shit's actually pretty entertaining because they look like normal people, you know, but they're Scientologists, and every one of their workers hates their fucking life because they get paid shit, and they get paid on performance. They apply WISE conditions, like the WISE business resource. So like this is the thing in Scientology that will ruin you as a staff member is, every week you have to have higher stats, and if you don't, then you get a cut in pay.
It's like business.
But the thing is, so if you're making banjos and you make five banjos, one, like, you get your paycheck for the week, but the next day you make four, then they're gonna cut 50 to whatever how many dollars off of your paycheck.
Right. I mean, did you know this?
So you don't get an hourly.
How they spun that, how they're just really just such great people that they're willing to make those sacrifices in their lives to make the world a better place. To make the banjos?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Don't you just know that these banjos, this is the oldest company, we're the first ones to, you know, and you know what? There is some legitimacy to that in the way that some young luthier may want to have that on his resume, a job at Deering banjos, because they were the first ones to make the six string banjo.
Fascinating a little bit, that part.
Well, to answer your question, Travis and I both agreed that they will get some people off of it. You know, there's some low income areas that have DirecTV in Hollywood. A lot of the Hispanic communities, you know, they'll have it in Spanish. And believe it or not, there are a lot of Hispanic Catholic Scientologists at PAC Base. At least there was whenever I was there. There was a rotating door because most of those Hispanic Catholics, like, they don't, you know, once you cross that line with them, like with the aliens and stuff, they'll just walk. You know, they're like, oh no, Jesus, it's Jesus, it's not aliens. You know, but. Yeah, that's good. But they do, low cost of labor, they'll work for cheap. You know, they'll go and join staff and clean and stuff like that. And then the staff will try and get them to basically give up their wages for services and get them brainwashed real good.
Yeah, I want to say real quick, one thing I saw in there it's so funny, like, this has nothing to do with your interview with Aaron, but I saw it mentioned in your interview with Aaron, and it made me think about it. There was one of those ads for Scholastic, Applied Scholastics, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And the commercial for it was, you know, we care about your education and making you a better studier. And all I could think was, what bullshit. Education's not important at all. Education's about Hubbard. And sure enough, they let me off the hook and helped me understand that I was on the right track thinking when they said, we believe it's just because it's an misunderstood word. And I'm thinking, wow, anyone who isn't in the know about this that's watching this is going to think, oh, okay, so that algebraic equation I was having trouble with, there's a word in that word problem I'm not getting. And they're going to help me understand that. And that's not what that is at all.
Right, but there may be someone watching who is not as literate as they'd like to be, and be like, you know what, I may start looking up more words, and then they may have an improvement in their life because their vocabulary improved, and now they can attract a more, I don't know, intelligent mate, like a female that is an intelligent female that maybe they, that won't, like, throw bricks at their head, you know? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it might improve their life a little bit. Like, that's what Scientology says it will do. So even if it does it through a commercial in a small way, that generates leads. It's the law of averages. Someone will go in and be like, you know what? I did the word thing, the misunderstood word thing, and I was just wondering what else you got. Well,
you
step right up.
Life. Yeah. Well,
yep.
Man, I really appreciate you doing this and coming on here. Hopefully, as predicted, this will be the clearest audio I've ever had on this podcast. And could be.
Yeah, I hope so.
I'm going to link your YouTube channel. I'm going to link your website onto the description.
Perfect. Yeah, I'll give you a thing on my blog too, man. We'll hook it up. We'll do that. Cross-brand and cross-pollinate, all that good stuff.
Absolutely. And what I do at the end of every interview with every guest, even though we had a little fun, but usually, you know, there's so much down.
I had fun. I had more than a little fun. More than a little fun. Come on, man.
Yeah, I do. Okay. Cool. Very good.
You had some good laughs. We had some good laughs. Got some information out there, you know.
Absolutely.
Here on Come Get Some Extra.
So
what's the thing you do?
10 questions. So it's just really silly questions. Some might be thought-provoking, and you just answer the first thing comes to mind. And if you
that
don't like
fun.
The question, you can skip it.
Okay.
Well,
oh, cool. That's
question
cool.
Skipped, I think, ever. All right, so here we go. 10 questions with Marcus Sawyer.
Ten questions.
Number one. Horror, comedy, or action?
Comedy.
Comedy is good. Always good to laugh. Number two, true or false?
No, I'm not talking about laughing. I'm talking about the Divine Comedy by Dante, where it's incredibly depressing.
Jesus Christ. Gotcha.
Question number nine.
Yeah, let's get this over with. Number two, true or false? If you've done any research on this, I mean, you know how they did it with Scientology. True or false, it's way too easy to create a religion from thin air.
From thin air?
Yeah, you can create it. You know you can create your own religion, right?
Yeah, actually, I'm working on that with a friend. The First Church of Good Gaming. Yeah, it's a gaming church. True.
It, yeah. Way too easy.
True. Thing. Question number eight.
Yeah, I normally move to three, but I got to ask you a follow-up on this one. So you've done research on what it takes to start a religion, right?
I know what it takes.
You've done the research on what's required?
Well, I was a Scientologist, so, I mean, I can pretty much just, like, wing it.
Yeah, read the documentation that the government puts. It's like they tell you have to make up a story, basically. Basically. Anyway, that's why it's too easy.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Okay. Well, you had a follow up. I'm just gonna punctuate it with this. I have been an avid online gamer for at least 8 years, and I was a guild leader for 4 years. And my favorite genre is post-apocalyptic. And if I had to start my own religion, like a gaming religion, the story, if the government wants a damn story, it's going to be about the whole world getting nuked and a savior coming out of and it's going to be the Lone Wanderer from Fallout 4 that Bethesda makes. And that's going to be the damn hero. And our placards are going to say, there is no emperor in the wasteland.
Now, obviously, you mentioned that because there is a connection we talked about recently between Scientology and Fallout. For the follow-up on that.
Oh, there is. Yeah, there totally is. Yeah, maybe we could. Maybe if we do the ARC and the overt act motivator sequence, we could slip that in too.
A little bit, sure. Number three.
All right. Number three. Okay. Eight or three?
Three.
All right. I'm picking up what you're throwing down. I got you.
Finish this sentence. Now, you kind of covered this a little bit already, but it's what I have. So, number three, attending the Clearwater event.
Yes.
Finish the sentence.
I did, yes. Comma, yes.
Attending the Clearwater event, yes. All right, well, is that a prediction? For
yes, I am, and I did, and I will. Like, if I can go again, I totally will, man.
Works
it's awesome.
For me. Works for me. Number four. Oh, this is really kind of deep or not. Number four, the most important thing. What is the most important thing?
You know, somebody told me this one time, and I forgot. The most important thing in life?
This is a question for you, man. Whatever you feel is the most important thing.
My children.
I don't know that there's a better answer than that. Number five.
There's not.
Number five. Great answer. Number five. Egg roll. California roll or dinner roll?
California roll.
All right. These might take a little longer to answer than normally in these questions. Number six, worst thing you have ever witnessed in Scientology.
What was the what?
Worst thing you ever witnessed in Scientology.
Jesus Christ. That's the deep question.
I assume you witnessed some pretty bad things.
Well, it depends on what you call witness, but I'm going to say this is witnessing it because it was my friend Dominic, who's still in, his wife, who they had a prearranged marriage, like she was 16, and they basically said, yeah, you can marry her. But they did love each other. They've had, that I know of, three abortions.
God.
No, this is a Steiner Mission thing.
Oh, okay. Would she run it like the Sea Org Turtles?
I mean, you know, I don't feel like I could tell you this. There was a definite competitive type vibe between Sea Org and regular mission staff. And there's definitely a competitive vibe from mission staff to public, because public just get to receive services. Staff have to administer, recruit, and maybe receive services. And the Sea Org doesn't get any services and has to do nothing but serve. Hmm. So there's a jealous, competitive vibe that is there. And, So there's a lot of things that you see that are really messed up. But for me personally, in a manner of closeness, like if I was very close to Dominic and Eve, we both started in Scientology at about the same time. So Dominic started a year before me, but he got very quickly up in the management, and him trying to explain to me that they lost the baby, and him not being able to say it was one of the hardest things for me to listen to. Wow. You know, it was very heartbreaking because here is a person who's lost more than one child. And I don't know if he's being told that it was a miscarriage or if he actually really knows. I really don't know if he knows that they do forced abortions. Wow. Like he really doesn't believe anything about it that's negative, you know?
I'm sorry about that.
So no, that's a good one. That's
pretty dark.
That's doing your job. Yeah, I used to produce radio. I used to produce. No, that was compelling. That was compelling.
And it's good for people to know that this happens, because I don't think people think that we don't really talk a lot about the missions, and I think there needs to be a little bit more on missions. I have a lot of.
Well, let me put it to you that way. You are hitting the nail on the head, my friend. Because if you get into the mission networks and talk to them, that is where the source of blood comes. That's the Mississippi River to Clearwater. All the missions in the world. They get the creme de la creme. They train them up. They send them to flag. They get them into reg classes, and they do training. And they fleece everybody. So, yeah, no, missions are the lifeblood of the Sea Org. That's where they get their Sea Org members.
Yeah, we're gonna come back to that in a future conversation, I think.
Cool. All right, so question number, what is it, two?
Number three? Seven. What's the best thing you ever witnessed in Scientology? What's the best thing you ever witnessed? Anything positive?
Yeah, there was one really awesome thing, or two, actually. But let's see, do I choose? I can do it quickly. So this guy named Jason, I'll just call him Jason. When he arrived at the mission, he was a total asshole. Like the Glengarry Glenn Ross, Alec Baldwin character asshole. And within 3 months after doing some auditing, he was not an asshole anymore.
Huh.
He was a really nice guy, and he should have left Scientology right then and there, but he didn't. He was like, well, if a penny does that, then a pound will do this, you know? So he doubled down and went crazy probably later. And then the other moment was when my brother went into a session because he was getting sick. And I mean, he was congested and he looked bad, sounded bad. And it was like early in the morning. He wanted the day off, you know, he was like sick. And they're like, no, you're going in session with Wayne. And Wayne was like the top star auditor at Ventura. He's also won several awards at Flag. And so he went in session, and when he came out, he was like, he could breathe. His face wasn't all swollen. Like, I mean, he just like, I feel fine. It was like something just went bloop, and he wasn't sick anymore. It was the weirdest thing.
Hmm. Okay.
This is very, very strange.
I got to lean coincidence on that one, man. That's pretty cool.
I'm just saying that at that time, you see, you're asking me,
right,
it's a little deceptive because, like, at that time, that was an amazing thing to me.
Right. No, I got you.
You know?
That's cool. I said in Scientology, so that is valid.
You did. You said in Scientology. I'm not really a grammar Nazi, but I do like diction.
All right. Number eight, true or false, social media is overrated.
Hell yes, it is.
I agree.
But
I
it's also
it.
Not. I mean, it is and it's not. I mean, I fuck, whatever. I miss meeting people because it feels like I'm increasingly, and we all are increasingly living in our own private prisons. And just interacting with each other through screens.
Find yourself texting someone in the same house.
exactly. It's like that's you're in a cell, and then the other person's in another cell, but it's a prison cell. It's your body.
Right.
You're like, and your body is sucked into this device. You know, I'm not sure if it ain't aliens. You know, it may not be Xenu, but it could be, I don't know, Thorpians or something. I just made that word up. Sounds like something Ellery would say. The Thorpians.
It does. Number nine, plaid or stripes?
What?
Plaid or stripe?
Oh, okay. Yeah, stripes. I can't do plaid.
And number 10, I usually leave it open. Is there anything that maybe we didn't talk about or anything you want to say that's important to you to have out there that you want to put on here, number 10?
Well... I wanted to quote, I've been drinking again. No, that's just something that we say at band practice. Yep, been drinking again. Got a new song.
On the next one, some extra intervention. Okay.
No, if I had something that I would want to put out there, it's to check out the Aftermath Foundation. And now there is a way to directly help people who've been affected by Scientology. I kind of wish that I would have waited to come out of the closet, so to speak, because, like, you know, I've got a GoFundMe set up right now, and it is kind of crucial to keeping me in a position where I'm able to stay close to my kids and find work while I get the final medical clearance that I've been waiting for the last 15 months. So within the next 3 months, I should have an all clear on everything, and the GoFundMe has been helping a lot. But I know that the Aftermath Foundation has already helped at least, I can only say what I know, that they've helped one person incredibly efficiently.
Good.
Like when we're talking about getting somebody out who's like currently in like an intervention type situation that's very volatile and very, very emotionally violent, like really over the top, they just successfully did it, and so it's worth supporting, you know.
Yeah, well, that decision could come down to that very process of, I have nowhere to turn, so I'm just going to stay, when now there's somewhere to turn.
Exactly. And, you know, it really makes me think, it makes me thankful that, you know, I have, luckily in my travels, I've been to all the lower 48, most of the time asleep in a tour bus, but everywhere I go, there's people I know. So no matter what happens, I mean, right now I'm living close to my kids in a guest house, which is wonderful. It's where I grew up. And the donations are helping me, you know, stay here so that I can find a job here. But, you know, the Aftermath Foundation is the future of that. And I think it's better that it goes that way, because the people who are on the executive board are ex-Scientologists and the only attorney that ever won a claim against a Scientologist. So very good, very qualified, very experienced in understanding and know what an ex-cult member, especially out of Scientology, will need if they're at any point. Because at this point, there have been people who have left and have been out for years. So there's almost, you've heard of the, like, peeling the layers of the onion,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. Well, that does happen. And so no matter what stage of the process you're in, I think that it's the Aftermath Foundation will be able to help every person and do it in a way that's a lot less humiliating. Because let me tell you, it was humiliating for me to post a GoFundMe account, you know, like I've never had to do anything that I felt so ashamed of, you know? So I had to swallow the pride and just, you know, ask for help. And thankfully people have been helping. And I'd like to see that extended to the Aftermath Foundation as well. Like, 'cause now there is a singular place where you can help.
There's a lot of people always asking, what can I do to help? What can I do to help? And really, if you go to the website, I think it's aftermathfoundation.org. Or is it?
Yeah.
I think it's .org. And there's a link for donate, and there's a link for volunteer. And
yeah, I've already volunteered for web development and content creation or whatever they need, because,
awesome.
You know, I'll support it. I mean, I don't want to get paid. You know, it's an organization that I would volunteer for.
You're on the fence and you're trying to decide, there's a button for need help.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, yeah, exactly. At the same time, I am an ex-Scientologist, and there's other things. Good God, like dive bomb. Let me just say this: if you're thinking about Scientology, this is a good way to end it. All right.
Okay.
Scientology
don't. Just don't. That's the moral of the story. Just don't. Just go, like, think of it as, like, if you have a proclivity or no, that's not the right word. If you have an aversion to the tambourine guys at the LAX airport, that's the same thing Scientology is. So Scientology, do not. Yeah, the Hare Krishnas, and you know, I got nothing against the Hare Krishnas, but you know, it's a cult, you know, it's a cult.
All right, Marcus. Well, thank you so much for doing this, man. I appreciate it, and I can't.
No problem. Thank you, man. Awesome, Chris. All right. Well, do you have an outro?
Sure. And here it is. Next week, I'll be back on Friday around 12:30 again p.m. Eastern time with a very special guest. I would just say it's a guest that Scientology probably doesn't want me to talk to. So look forward to that. Until then, stay connected. That about sums it up.
If I speak for your followers, and I speak for your ex-followers, and I speak for the curious outsiders looking in, and you remain silent in the shadows and don't let your balls drop enough to come out and say something, then I say, who do you speak for, Mr. Miscavige?
Anything on earth that says, don't listen to your mum and dad, don't talk to your mum and dad, that's bad.
Yep.
Wrong.
I remember sitting there wishing I could just scream out loud and beg for help. But I knew if I did that, I would never see Mark again.
This is the thing about real life. You can't experience the great things without the bad things.
I felt like it would probably do better off if we didn't exist. And, you know, came up with a plan on how to end it.
He talks about a seven-year-old child.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he's referring to actually an adult. So let's say we change back to an adult. Okay, the woman shudders because the man hits her even passionately. The fact is that she shudders.
You do a big apology to me and give me my kids back.
I'm still shocked by the evil. Yes, even to this day, when I see a video of a former friend or family member, I'm like, this is pure evil at work.